Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and delighted to have you with us. We're going to have a very interesting show today. We've got Tammy Flanagan. She is a benefits expert, columnist for Government Executive Magazine. And Tammy, you've gotten into the business lately. Number of things I want to ask you about, but you have been doing webinars for NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees.
Yeah, I had an opportunity this year to start doing some online training. They have this new thing called their Federal Benefits Institute. So it's going to be an online training site on NARF.org. So yeah, I get to do the first webinar, and I did it last week. So I'm real excited about it and hope to do some more throughout the year.
Well, would you explain what, I know there's a webinar and there are web chats.
Right. Okay. Yeah, webinars are whenever I do an actual presentation online, so there'll be slides and I, you know, speak about the slides. It's almost like a live training session, only it's on your computer rather than you come to me. With an online chat, and we've done those, you and I, here at the radio station, and we're going to do actually both with these online webinars, because we're going to do the webinar first, and then we'll follow it up with an online chat. And that's where the listeners who just listened to the presentation have their chance to ask questions, and we type back the questions to them. So it'll be an ongoing conversation that you can just watch it kind of scrolling on your screen. And the whole thing gets archived, so even if you missed last week's webinar, you can still see it. It's available on NARF's website, NARF.org.
And you can sit there in your BVDs at home.
That's right. You could watch it on the weekend if you really wanted to, so sure.
Now, you said for NARF members, this is free.
Correct.
They log into www.narf.org. Mm-hmm. What about if you're not a NARF member?
Yeah, if you're not a NARF member, they're offering a special promotion that you'll get a year's membership if you sign up for the webinar. So you can either look at it as a free webinar or a free year's membership, but you just pay for 1 year of NARF membership and you'll get 12 issues of the monthly magazine, as well as entrance to all the webinars that we do. So
right,
it's,
and I know NARF
pretty good
is
deal.
Very anxious to get active duty federal workers in there. They have a growing number, but those are the people you need to sustain it, and also to remind the organization and Congress that we're working right now. We're not yet retired, but
absolutely,
retirement is our is the jewel in the crown.
Yep. Yeah. NARF's main purpose is preserving and protecting federal benefits for both active and retired federal employees. And I think in those pre-retirement years leading up to your retirement, that's when you should be really concerned about what's happening, because those are the benefits that have to sustain you there for the rest of your life. So, you know, you don't want the high three to go to the high five.
Yeah.
Or
well, somebody
something
once
else
described it as like an organization of 500,000-600,000 people, clients with one goal, and that was protect the retirement
that's
system.
Right.
Now, speaking of retirement, you have done this every which way but up, I guess, and you are in your own version of phased retirement. Now, you left the government.
Right.
You've been in the private sector working with different groups, as I mentioned, a columnist for Government Executive, among other things, frequent guest here on this show. And you worked for the National Institutes of Transition Planning, still work with them.
Absolutely.
And now you've invented your own phased retirement program.
Yeah, I found out that what they say is true. When you retire, you're actually busier than when you're still working. So I thought in my retirement, I wanted to try some different things out that I hadn't really had time to focus on when I was working full time. But as a result, I ended up taking a lot of part-time work that now I am working pretty much more than I was before. But the goal is to try to find something that really fits my new lifestyle, since I want to live more in Florida. So, you know, things I'll continue, and I still want to teach because I love teaching pre-retirement classes. But these webinars are another opportunity, and then doing also some one-on-one counseling, which I really do enjoy that, but it's very time consuming. So I don't get to do a lot of it, but looking forward to doing more of that in the future as well.
Well, I've been around you, and I've seen your colleague John Elliott help people and literally bring tears to their eyes when they find out something, a benefit they didn't know they had, or they can leave several years earlier.
I counseled a woman yesterday who had 49 years of federal service, and believe it or not, even though she had all of that service, she still had enough credits to qualify for Social Security, and I wish I could have talked to her 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because she's retiring at age 80, could have been collecting Social Security for the last 10 years, but was so focused on her career that she didn't even think about it. And she said that really wasn't important to her. You know, she has this full government career in addition to that, so she's a real young 80-year-old.
Yeah. Well, when you and I started out, literally everybody was under the old civil service retirement system. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was it. It's a sort of a fire and forget system. You go in, you put in your time, you get a defined benefit, a formula. you know, precisely what you're going to be getting, 56% of your high three salary and all that sort of thing. That was fine. With FERS, totally different ball game. It's like the best private sector retirement plan in America, maybe on earth. But it still requires some maintenance and some fine-tuning, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The civil service system, the old system as we still call it, was a single benefit plan. So as long as you understood, like you said, when I can go, how much I'm going to get for that one single benefit, you kind of had it made. And that's all you had to do. There wasn't a whole lot of planning involved, although people do plan for that as well. But with FERS, it's more like a three-piece jigsaw puzzle because you're trying to put together your basic government pension with entitlement to Social Security, and then you add to that your savings and investments, your TSP, along with anything else you have saved for retirement. You have to make sure all those fall into place at the right time. So it's a little bit more difficult with FERS, but I'd say on the plus side, it's more flexible because you have the ability to move those benefits in and out of federal service a little easier than the old system.
It's portable, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really the purpose, because I seem to recall back when it was still called the General Accounting Office, but the GAO put out a report, and this was some years back, but they said that only about a third of the people who go to work for the government, you know, who raise their hands and swear to allegiance and all that, but only about a third of them actually retired from the government. Yep. And on the others, the two-thirds who come in and out but don't retire from the government, they're kind of, in a sense, subsidizing the other people. They're putting money into the fund. And
yeah, I'm kind of a prime example of that because I stayed 8 years and left to go out and do training. So those 8 years really don't represent much in the way of retirement benefits because I'm not going to collect a pension from it because I left early. That old system was really...
It was for lifers.
You know, you and I used to both call it the golden handcuffs of civil service because it really did have that. If you didn't stay a full career, you pretty much left behind what you had worked on.
Right.
And unless you come back and reinstate those benefits, it doesn't have much value. Although if you do stay long enough to retire, it's a very, very valuable system and does provide, you know, hands-off lifetime benefits.
You know, I have a feeling, I couldn't prove it. We haven't done any surveys or polls, but I have a feeling that people are under FERS, you know, you accept what you have and you accept it as the norm. But when I tell people, private sector types, that people under the FERS retirement system, which is the majority of people working now, get a 5% government match to their thrift savings plan, they look at me like I'm crazy. And this is a tax-deferred pay raise.
Right.
And all you have to do to get it is put in 5% of your own money, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right, yes. And not only that, but then they also get a pension. And I've noticed over the last maybe 3 or 4 years this shift happening, because you've probably seen this as well when you talk to FERS employees years ago. They would always feel like the stepchild, like they don't have, you know, the full benefit. But now that they have some of them have close to 30 years or more federal service, so they're actually retiring with a full career. And now they've been in the TSP for almost 30 years. That was 1987. So some of those TSP accounts are just blossoming now because you're compounding whatever earnings there are on a much bigger balance than what you were even 15 years ago. So now when I ask my classes, are you glad you're under FERS? A lot of them will now say wholeheartedly, yeah, this is a great system, you know, because now they're comparing themselves with their neighbors who grew up in the private sector, like you said, who may not have had the match, may not have a pension, may not have lifetime health benefits. And so they're for the most part, pretty satisfied now.
I looked at I have two equivalent of the TSPs, 401k plans, one from the Washington Post, one from here, and combined, they're okay. Mm-hmm. But I think if somebody had been putting in an extra 5% for me every year for low these many years, it would probably be double.
Yeah, you wouldn't be here now, right?
Yeah,
wouldn't be Bahamas
talking.
Or somewhere.
Yeah. I know that you brought the, I guess this is the
slide deck.
Okay, this is a slide deck. When you do this, when you did this webinar, mm-hmm. and when you do others, and I should ask too, can people at this late date a week afterwards still get it?
They can, yep. They're
okay,
available.
So
it's going to be archived.
Deal.
So yeah, sure. This one will be, and then any future ones we do will be added to it. So hopefully eventually there'll be a library of these that people can listen to when they need to or review them and get information I might have missed the first time. So I think that's one of the pluses of this type of training. It's in little short segments, but you can go back and review and pick up things you might have missed.
Okay. Matt Wingfield is our producer today. And Matt, are we about ready for a break? Okay. He's giving me the classic radio signal. I think that's what it was. But we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, talking with Tammy Flanagan. Tammy works with the National Institute of Transition Planning. You are a columnist for Government Executive Magazine. You're a frequent guest on this show. You appear on a For Your Benefit show here on this station every Monday at 10 a.m. And you are retired, living part-time here in the Washington area, part-time in Florida. And as you said in the earlier segment, you're like so many retired people, you feel busier than when you were working.
Yeah, and I think I'm really thinking in terms of being retired because my husband retired.
Yeah.
I'm kind of just trying to mold my career around his retirement. So it's kind of fun. It's challenging. And I think that's one of the things employees look forward to as well, is trying something different, trying something new for this next phase of their life. So that's what I'm thinking about. What are all the things I wish I would have done that I'm going to try to do now before I call it a day?
Yeah, and you are so young, too. Almost not fair. In fact, it's not fair, but go ahead. You're doing webinars now for NARF. You did one last week. And
one next month as well.
Okay, and you say they're free to NARF members, and if you're not a NARF member, you can join $39.95, and then that makes you a NARF member for a year, so you get a membership, and you get access to this and future webinars. Got the syllabus here in front of me. Can you kind of go through this to tell people what you told people?
Sure, yeah. I wanted to call it getting your ducks in a row, so there are some ducks on the slides.
Yeah.
But it's all about preparing for retirement. What can the employee do to really get themselves ready for a smooth transition into retirement? So we talked about, you know, just the basic rules of civil service and FERS. You know, I went over both retirement systems so that employees who aren't sure what that basic benefit looks like or when they're eligible for it will get a better understanding of when they become eligible to retire and how much it's going to be worth. Because to me, that's the basic building block of your retirement if you're a government employee, is to make sure you get that pension piece in place. And that's whether it's CSRS or FERS, because that's what's going to carry your health benefits with you.
Uh-huh, yes.
So then you add, you know, Social Security. So we'll talk, you know, we talked a little bit about Social Security and the value and the meaning of that benefit. Because I think a lot of people think of Social Security and the government pension as one and the same type of thing. And it really isn't. Because one of the things I tell my classes is the acronym FICA stands for, and I always ask classes, you know, what does that stand for? And they come up with all kinds of different answers, but it really stands for Federal Insurance Contributions Act. And I think people lose sight of the fact that it's a form of insurance. So it's kind of a tilted system, Social Security, that provides more to those who earn less and less to those who earn more as far as replacement of income.
Right. They call that the welfare tilt.
Yeah.
People don't like that term, but that's what it is.
It actually does that. So, and I always say that Social Security and TSP are kind of on a seesaw. So for someone who's worked their career at a fairly low grade, maybe a GS 7 or 9, which around DC area is kind of a lower grade level, if they did that and they said, well, I really couldn't afford to put that much in the TSP because, you know, after 2 weeks of working, I paid my bills. So for that employee who doesn't have $500,000 in their TSP account, it's not as big of a deal than if you had a GS 13 or 15 employee who said, I couldn't put anything in my TSP account, because they're not going to get as much replacement from Social Security as that GS-7 would. That's that tilt to the system. The GS-7 is going to get maybe 50% of their income in Social Security benefits replaced, where the GS-15 might get 15 or 20% replaced.
Yeah, the replacement. Yeah, and people don't think of that. The other thing that you often hear people say, more outside of government than in, but they talk about Social Security and they say, I paid for it. And everything. Well, you paid for some of it, correct?
Yeah, you paid the tax.
Uh-huh.
But everybody's got to pay the tax.
But if you live long enough to collect benefits, you get back a lot more than you put in.
Yeah, it all depends. And I kind of think of it like the school tax. You know, you live in a nice area of the country and you pay school taxes. And people who don't have kids sometimes say, why do I have to pay the school tax?
Yeah.
Well, that's why you live in this nice area, because it attracts good families. Yeah, it's part of social insurance.
You mentioned health insurance, which, again, I think this is the kind of thing that people who have it whatever the benefit is, take it for granted. But you know, my war story about the gym. I was in my gym 5-6 years ago. Beautiful young woman comes up, says, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" And I said, "Of course." And she said, "Well, it's kind of personal." And I was afraid she'd fallen for me, you know. Wrong. But anyhow, we went off to the side, and she said she's looking to meet a government worker or a retiree with a certain kind of insurance. She mentioned the brand. But but she was so savvy that, you know, I guess growing up in D.C., she knew that the government health insurance system, and this was, of course, before Obamacare, was the best, and she was looking for that. And this ability to take this federal retirement or federal insurance into retirement is no small thing.
It's a big deal. Yeah, I tell kind of jokingly, but not so much, for employees who retire single, I said, you know, if you're ever going to put that ad up on Match.com or one of those dating sites, I said, make sure you mention you have federal retiree, lifetime health benefits, and you don't even have to put a picture up because you're going to be the most attractive bachelor or bachelorette.
You know, I've told that to, well, I used to do seminars for NITP.
Yeah.
And I would tell my story, and then invariably a man or a woman would come up and said the same thing had happened to them. They were more desirable, and people knew it because of the health insurance.
Yeah, and I've also heard people say that when they meet someone new, they try to keep it quiet about their federal employment because they want to make sure they like them for them, not their benefits.
Right, right.
So what a time we live in where your benefits are the factor in your dating life.
Fascinating. And only in D.C.
That's right.
So back to your webinar. Mm-hmm. I see you use the term you're getting your ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Yeah, you really have to think about, you know, what I need to do. What is my role in getting a smooth transition to retirement? Because your agency has a role. Your agency's human resource office is going to help get that retirement application processed and through to payroll. So you get your last paycheck and your unused annual leave, and then they send everything to the Office of Personnel Management for final processing. But your role is to make sure you understand what you're entitled to. Make sure you know your career, what it consists of. Is all of your service creditable? Do you need to pay a deposit? Sometimes we call it a deposit if you have service that's potentially creditable, but you didn't pay into the retirement fund. Like in my case, where I took a refund of 8 years of federal retirement contributions, if I came back to the government, I would have to make a decision. Do I pay that money back? Do I leave it unpaid? So the employee's responsibility is to know about those things. And you find out about them by, you know, either going to a pre-retirement class or getting counseling, if you can get it at your agency on a one-on-one basis, so that you can find out what do I need to do to make sure I'm ready to retire, make sure I'm eligible, make sure all of my service is going to count. And even just make sure I filled out the application properly. Make sure I checked every box. You know, I've reviewed a lot of retirement applications where people forget to sign it, or they don't initial the election of what kind of a retirement do they want, with survivor benefits, without survivor benefits. You know, just some very common mistakes people make.
Well, you know, retiring, I talked to a very well-to-do federal retiree the other day. He and his wife both had top federal jobs, retired with very good annuities, and he also a good investor. And he said he still got scared before retirement. And I'm looking at your 5 points here. Consider how much income you'll need in retirement. A good point. Where's it going to come from? Understand the value of CSRS and FERS. Understand the value of Social Security. Understand the value of the TSP. You know, the 5 points. Mm-hmm. And then you have a quiz here. And how much income are you going to need in retirement? And you say, is it A, 50%, B, 80%, C, 100%, D, it depends.
Yeah.
Is there a correct answer?
No.
Okay.
And that's what people always want to know, because they're shooting for some target number, either a dollar amount or a percentage of replacement of income. And you know, if you think about it, is your spending really going to change that much the day after you retire than it did the day before? Some people may have said, yeah, I just paid off my mortgage, so I don't have that expense. But now the roof's going to need replaced. Now you're going to need a new kitchen, and you still have to pay property taxes. So really be realistic. And this is financial planning, but it's also common sense. You know, really think about that, because I think sometimes we get it stuck in our mind that 56% with civil service after 30 years is enough. But really, can you live on 56% of your pay right now? You're not going to pay into the TSP anymore. You're not going to pay into civil service or Social Security. But even without those deductions, you still have other expenses that you're still going to continue. Plus, you're going to have 50 hours a week more to spend it. So Be realistic about what you think you're going to need. And that might require sitting down with a financial advisor just to take a look holistically at everything you have and make sure you're making the right decision about this time to retire, or maybe it might make sense to work a couple of more years.
I used to work with a financial planner, and he specialized in federal workers, but other people as well. And he said he typically, husband and wife would come in. Oftentimes the husband had the job, but not necessarily. But he liked to tell it this way. And he said he would turn to the woman and say, "You're about to have half the income and twice the husband."
That's the truth.
This is a major psychological issue as well as a financial one.
Yeah, I had a guy and his wife come to a pre-retirement class one time, and his wife was the one that made him come to the class. And so they came up to me at the break time, and he admitted he was almost in tears. He said, "My wife has never been around me for 8 hours at a time, straight in a row, other than when we're sleeping." He says, "I'm really afraid that she's not going to like me."
Yeah.
And that was a real fear. So I think not only financial planning, but emotionally planning for retirement, because it's a big change in your life. It's a change if you're married for your spouse as well. And like in our family, my husband retired first. I'm going to watch him and see how he does it. And I'll decide if I want to join him full force in a couple of years. But I think one spouse retiring before the other sometimes makes sense. And other times, if you both go at it together and you start a whole new life, I think that can work as well. But just have some kind of a plan. It doesn't have to be a strict plan, but a loose plan.
Matt's giving us the signal again, but we'll be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Tammy Flanagan. Tammy is a benefits expert, probably as well known in the federal community as anybody around, including those of us who write columns and news stories. You mentioned Tammy and people's eyes light up. And you've got a new thing going now. You're doing webinars with NARF, and as we said earlier in the show, you can log on to NARF, and if you're a member, get the old ones, get the one you did last week, get the ones that are coming up. If you're not a member, you can become one at $39.95, and then that makes you a member for a year, and you have access to that and everything else NARF has.
Right.
Open season's coming up, health insurance open season. And I have often thought that, my mother was a retired federal worker. As the saying goes, I can genuinely say some of my best friends, many of them are retired federal workers, and they do so many things so well. I know a lot of them, the stuff they did when they were working was incredible. You had a NARF president who, among other things, was in charge of nuclear warheads in Europe during the Cold War, and the fact that none of them got away or were fired accidentally, he did good work. Look at the thalidomide scare in the late 1950s and early 60s. A stubborn woman researcher at the Food Drug Administration blocked it from coming into the U.S. Looked it up the other night. There were 20 to 25,000 children born in about half of them in Germany, many in Canada, our neighbor, but around the world, they were born with flippers instead of arms or legs, and about 10,000 are alive today. She kept the stubborn U.S. bureaucrat kept that out of this country. And, you know, there are people like that all the time, saving our bacon every day. That said, the one thing that federal retirees typically do a lousy job of is during the open season. I think 94% of the people in the federal employee health benefits program stay with the same plan year after year. Yep. Among retirees, it may be as high as 99 because they got one in 1960 and they liked it and they've stayed with it no matter what. What would you say to them?
Yeah, we're in that open season period now coming up where we start to hear and we get delusions. I think it's almost like too much information sometimes because we're getting it at the health fairs. We see we have 30 or 40 different choices of health plans. And I think when someone's given too many choices, they just freeze and they just do nothing, which is unfortunate because now we have so many ways to save money on taxes when it comes to health care. We have different choices in the type of health plans, which are, as Walt Francis says, sometimes the lines are blurring because you have, you know, the traditional Blue Cross style plan, you know, the fee-for-service plan like we've always had. And you have HMOs over here. But now they're kind of becoming one and the same because the fee-for-service plans now have, you know, you real incentives to use their preferred provider network. If you go outside a network, you can pay more. And with the HMOs, they now have open access and you can go outside the HMO network if you're willing to pay a little bit more. So they're almost one and the same. So you really have to look at everything you're entitled to and look at your stage in life, because where you are now may be different than where you were 10 or 20 years ago. You know, you become qualified for Medicare, or if you're a young person, you might get married or you might start a family. And so those are times in your life when different types of health plans might work better than the one you had before. So I really think federal employees can put some extra money in their pocket next year, even without a cost of living adjustment for retirees or much of a pay increase for employees, by making better choices on healthcare, because we do have so many choices that can help you save some money.
Well, it's interesting you talk about the excess number of choices, many would say, and I know financial planners say the same thing. When you ask people in a company, you want more choices, they always say, yeah. Mm-hmm. But when you give it to them, it's kind of paralysis by analysis. They don't know what they're in, and they may get in the safest, most basic, least productive plan.
So yeah, I read that about the TSP. I think it was a New York Times article that said that one of the successes of the TSP is having five choices, GFCS&I, so that employees can really understand just those five choices and choose according to what they need to
do. And, you know, they've been under tremendous pressure since day one to add a precious metals fund, a gold fund, a green fund, you name it, and they've resisted it. And one of them was REITs. And for a while there, the REITs were the hottest thing going, real estate investment trusts. Then it bottomed out when the Great Recession hit us, and people who were in that would have been in bad shape if they had to retire at that time. So, yes.
Be careful sometimes what you wish for.
Yeah, you have too many choices. So you're looking at if you're a federal worker, going to be a federal retiree, where does your money come from?
Well, it's going to come from OPM. The Office of Personnel Management is going to send your FERS or CSRS retirement check. So you're going to deal with them. And that's also the agency that's going to become kind of like your personnel office after retirement, because you're going to carry your health benefits through OPM, your life insurance that you continue, your dental, vision, your health benefits, all that comes through OPM after retirement. So that's one agency. Then you qualify for Social Security. So that's a whole nother application. You apply to socialsecurity.gov or call them up on the phone and begin receiving your Social Security retirement when you're 62 or sometime after age 62, depending on, you know, what you're doing at the time. And then you're going to deal also with the Thrift Savings Plan, separate, independent federal agency, not part of OPM, not, of course, part of Social Security. So when you want to start receiving money from your TSP account, you're going to have to apply directly to the TSP to receive either a partial distribution or a monthly check, or some people might buy an annuity with it. But whatever you plan to do, you're going to do that directly from the TSP.
Yeah.
So you'll have three checks and three agencies.
Yeah. And it's possible, too, that I know many people get a civil service benefit. They get Social Security, and some get military retired pay, and some get all three.
Yeah.
And, you know, critics call them triple dippers, but people who get it point out that they served and they paid and they deserve
the sacrifice,
it, so they're
absolutely
not dipping anything. I jumped off something about the health insurance, a point I wanted to ask you about, is the new Self Plus One thing. So instead of in the past, you had self only or self plus family. And that the family could be two people, the family could be 26 people, but it was still family plan. The people whose kids are grown out of the house, or people who never had kids and never planned to, always resented this. They said it's not fair that the two of us should be charged the same premium as somebody. And the critics said, if we do it, it's not going to make much difference. And everybody said, try it, you must. Congress finally got on the bandwagon, ordered the OPM to set up a Self Plus One. And guess what? The premiums are about the same, aren't they?
Yeah. The premiums in general went up for next year. So you're seeing already an increase in premiums. And then the health plans had to separately evaluate the cost of running the self-only option. Now this Self Plus One, try to figure out what that group is going to look like, and then the self and family. So that each group is going to have different expenses. When you think about it, the Self Plus One enrollments, a lot of those are going to be retirees.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the few employers in the country that covers their retirees.
Exactly.
And we have as many, if not more, retirees in federal health plan than we have employees. So you forget about the fact that once you're in retirement, you may have developed a chronic illness that requires expensive drug therapy, or you may have a chronic illness that requires continuous care at the doctor's or maybe hospitalization from time to time. That's all very expensive health care. So you'll notice in some of the plans, not all of them, but there's a few of them where the self plus one is actually a little bit more than the self and family. Or you might see one that's almost the same within $2 or $3 difference. And I think people were probably expecting there to be a much bigger separation. And some you will. Some you'll see there might be $30 savings because that plan either hasn't been out very long yet or doesn't have that many older retirees in it yet.
Yeah, right. And they're experienced rated. So I think the surprise is yet to come down the road, 2, 3, 5 years, when if you have a particular plan that has a lot of retirees, they're going to have to raise their premiums. Yep. Need to take a short break here. And we'll be right back. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert. And we were talking about federal health insurance. And you mentioned we should say something about Medicare.
Yeah, because the next webinar I do with NARF is going to be on FEHB and Medicare. And I find that in my experience with pre-retirement classes, that's the big question that comes up. You know, we got over the fact that we're able to carry our health insurance into retirement. Now we've either already turned 65 or we're about to turn 65. What do we do now? Because all federal employees pay into Medicare. Everybody pays the FICA tax and the Medicare tax. So that Medicare tax is 1.45% of your paycheck. So we know that we've paid into it. What does that mean? What are we qualified for? So at age 65, you do qualify for premium-free Medicare Part A. So I would say no-brainer, sign up for Part A. It's going to give you some hospital coverage for when the doctor says you have to spend the night. It's inpatient only. It's when you're admitted to the hospital to spend the night. And it's going to work side by side with your federal health plan to pay secondary if you're retired or primary if you're still employed. And anything one doesn't cover, the other one may help pay for. In fact, once you're retired, most plans will be wraparound 100% coverage for inpatient care when you combine Medicare Part A with any federal health plan just about. So really good to have Part A. But the question always comes up with Part B. And this year in particular, people are very concerned about Part B because we're still not sure if that extra higher premium of Medicare is going to kick in for 2016 for those people who don't pay for Medicare from a Social Security check, which would be a lot of our CSRS retirees may be in for a big increase. And that's one of the things NARF is trying to get Congress to sign off legislation to not have that happen. Because there's that, I think you've written about it too, the hold harmless provision of Medicare that says if your Social Security benefit doesn't go up, then your Medicare premium is not going to go up, even though the cost has risen. So we're still, you know, maybe by now we're going to hear about that any day, but that's a big unknown. So with Medicare Part B, what do? Do we pay an extra $100 to $150 a month for Part B coverage when that's doctor's coverage? You know, we have federal health insurance that covers when we go to the doctor, when we need outpatient care, when we go to the hospital for surgery that's not inpatient. You know, our federal health insurance has always done a good job of covering those expenses. But again, don't forget, as we get older, we may need more health care. And so that little deductible or that co-insurance that we paid once or twice a year now might be coming on a more frequent basis. In fact, I joke about this. I said, sometimes you might get to the stage in life where you start to schedule your social life around your doctor visits.
I've known people like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily just elderly folks. It can be anyone with a serious illness where they have repeated visits for physical therapy or outpatient care, you name it. So when that starts adding up 15% for this visit and 30% for that one, that's when $100 a month for Medicare Part B doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah.
So
I know Jessica Clement and David Snell from NARF have been going around lobbying that this increase doesn't take place and explaining how heavy it will be. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I've always kind of thought too, particularly for older people, when you are at risk, statistically you're going to spend 60% more on help medical bills than you did as a 35-year-old. It's just the way of the world.
Yeah.
But some people, I know several people who say, I'm just going to save that money, that extra $150 a month or whatever. I'm going to put it aside, and I'll use it if for medical things if I need it, as opposed to others, the belt and suspenders type, who say I'm going to get it and I won't have to worry. But it seems to me that the ones that are saving it, $150 a month times 12 is whatever it is, but it's not a lot of money. If you have a major medical problem, and it would seem to me that I would rather have the coverage than have some cash in the bank earmarked for medical coverage, because you know a heart procedure could be $100,000.
Yeah, I know a lot of the argument for that, because I hear people saying that. In fact, statistically, OPM has noticed that more and more people are declining Medicare Part B, which mm-hmm. is putting a bigger burden on the federal health plans.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's true. But as you get older and you start to use that health insurance combined with Medicare, you start to realize that not all the things you need health-wise are part of that catastrophic cap. Because some people say, well, I can pay, you know, $5,000 a year out of pocket because that's the cap on my health plan. But don't forget, some things like prescriptions, number one, are not always included in that catastrophic cap. So you may want to have that extra coverage so that you can better budget for the cost of your health care as you get older and never have to make that decision of, do I go to the doctor or do mm-hmm. I buy groceries this week? So, you know, having that good double coverage between Medicare and federal health insurance is not a bad idea. What you might want to consider is that you do have, like we said, you know, many different choices for federal health insurance. So if you're still in good health, don't pick the most expensive plan. Pick something more reasonable that still gives you that good coverage for catastrophic benefits, but it gives you a much lower premium and maybe even gives you a health fund that you can start setting money aside for the future.
I like to, every show, to mention the five-year rule, mm-hmm. because I've run across people, you've run across people, who they get ready to retire and they say, I'm going to keep Blue Cross or Mail Handlers or Geehaw, what have you. And they say, no, excuse me, you haven't been covered for the five years prior to retirement, so you can't take your health insurance with you. And invariably, those people, they now figure it out, they will stay in government another 2, 3, 4 years in order to be eligible for that. So if you're not enrolled in a federal health plan right now and you think you're ever going to retire, as opposed to dropping dead at your desk, get one of those inexpensive health plans, even if you don't need it, if your spouse has better coverage mm-hmm. in a different job, because that's insurance that you can have insurance, correct?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people say, when should I start my retirement planning? And well, these days I say you should start the day you get hired, but at the very least, start at least 5 years before you retire, because not only health benefits, but also life insurance has a five-year test.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not covered, and I always call it the umbrella of federal health benefits, it doesn't have to be the same plan for 5 years, and you don't even have to be paying for it. So you could be covered under your federal spouse's plan, and you still have the 5 years of coverage. But you mentioned the one case where it can be a big issue, and that's when you're under a spouse's non-federal plan.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, oh, this is so great. And then you find out that you're both going to retire next week, and that not wonderful private sector plan doesn't go into retirement. Now you're stuck with no health insurance.
Yeah, and many, many people have found that the private sector plan, up until recently at least, was in some ways superior, or maybe there were no premiums. But boy, the day you retire, in some cases, when you turn 65, they cut you off.
It goes away. You have to go. Well, Medicare luckily does have supplemental plans, as Medicare Advantage plans. So those folks aren't left with no health insurance, but what a wonderful thing to be able to keep a benefit that the federal government's paying 72% of the premium. So it's very, very good comprehensive coverage that really eliminates a lot of your out-of-pocket expenses even after age 65.
In your webinar, I'm just looking. I love quizzes. I watch Jeopardy every night if I'm home and I can. You've got a test your knowledge thing here. Which of the following statements is true? If you add your age and service and get 80, you can retire. Now, I've heard that all along.
I got that one from you because you used to talk about the myth of the 80. We don't know where that, I don't know if that was a proposal in Congress or what, but it was never that way. But yeah, we've always hear that, and people still think that if I add my age plus, you know, whatever, and I come up with the number 80, I can retire, which means if I'm 40 with 40 years of service, which wouldn't happen, I could retire at 40. But if I'm 50 with 30 years of service, some people think they can retire. That's absolutely false. So you have to meet specific age. So that one's not true. That's a false answer.
The urban myth in the federal service. Here's one. You can add your sick leave to your service to make you eligible to retire. So mm-hmm. if I have a year of sick leave saved up, I can consider, instead of having 28 years, I have 29 and I can retire. True?
False.
False. Okay.
Yeah. Your sick leave can be added to the calculation of your benefit, but it can't be used for eligibility. Now, one time, a funny story, I got an email from a woman and she said, I have 29 years of service and I have a year of sick leave saved up. I've been lucky to be very healthy. But my coworker told me that I'm going to still have to work another year to make me eligible to retire. And she was wanting to confirm, is that true? I almost fired back quickly saying, yeah, you got to work another year, until I realized she never told me how old she was.
Oh.
So I wrote back to her. I said, hey, could you mind sharing your age? And she said, yeah, I'm 68. So if you're 68, you don't need 30 years of service to be eligible to retire. You only need five.
Okay.
So the answer to the question was she could retire, but she didn't need to have 30 years.
Yeah, you need to add that little point. I know a woman called in, this was years ago, and she said she had nothing, and the guest was an expert like you. And we felt very sorry for her, and nothing we could do. I mean, we thought about maybe finding out where she lived and sending some money. And I said, well, do you have any other income or any source of money coming? And you know, we're very sad. And she said, yeah, I have $4 million in the bank. So yeah, from a settlement.
That little side note.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's one. He reached the minimum retirement age with 30 years of part-time service. You will not be eligible to retire.
False.
Okay. Yep. You can do it.
So you could have, just as a very clear example, let's say you have 30 years of service, but every single week you only work 20 hours a week. So you worked 50% of a full-time schedule. But if you're 55 years old or under FERS, you might have to be 56 or 57, you would still be considered having 30 years of service. So you could retire. Now, the calculation of the benefit would be computed first as if you had worked full time and then prorated based on the percentage of time you actually worked. So if you only worked 50% of the time, your benefit's only going to be worth 50% of what it would have been, but you could still retire. You'd still be eligible to retire. You might not be able to afford it, but you'd be eligible.
I know that a lot of people don't keep files on paper anymore. They trust them to the computer. Some of us keep files. But if you're a federal worker, what pieces of paper do you need in your file, you know, whether you're young or old?
Yeah, I'd keep the whole thing.
Okay.
I'd just keep the whole thing. And a lot of employees now have the electronic official personnel folder, which they can put onto a disk or a flash drive and just keep the whole thing. Doesn't take up any space. The worst thing is you'll lose the flash drive or the disk. But if you print it out, it's going to be a stack, maybe an inch thick for a real long career. But all those SF-50s, your beneficiary forms are in there, your health benefit registration, anything that says this is who you were as a federal employee is in there. You know, you got a bonus cash award. You want to go find a post-retirement job. Those look nice on a resume. So you can, you know, count up everything you've done throughout your career.
Okay.
Some of those personnel folders are very impressive.
Tammy, thank you so much. We'll have you back, and hope you all have a good week. We'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.